हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so this last thing of the paragraph of the karma. So we have already seen that according to karma, mimamsa consciousness and other mental states are not inherent in the soul, but rather arise only when the soul is related to objects through the body and senses. Their idea is that the soul has also, like Brahman, basically no qualities. Mm. So that there's no consciousness, anything. So if he's not related, he only has consciousness and senses and mind and thinking in connection with matter. If you disassociate with matter, then none of that's there. That's their idea. Mm. But then if that's the idea, then why would you care? You know, what's the big deal? If you're trying to get to a state where you won't even know that you're in that state, you know, so then what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't quite make sense, but whatever. It means they don't think about it that much, so they're happy. You know.
So a scholar within this line of thought, he would be thinking of it, but he's attached
to it, so they don't. Means thinking about it that much means they don't see what's maybe the weakness in it. Okay. Therefore, the liberated soul, being dissociated from the body and thus free of all senses, cannot have any consciousness, nor it can therefore enjoy bliss. Liberation is then desirable not as a state of bliss, but as a total cessation of pain. Right. So they just want to get rid of the pain. Right, so that sounds great when you're in pain, but once you're free from pain, then having some fun, it looks more interesting. Right, you know, that's the difficulty with this, is that it only works as long as you're associated with the material nature. As soon as you're freed from it, then it'll get boring really fast.
What?
Hmm.
This is
what I'm saying,
was liberation?
No, this is karma mimamsa.
Yeah,
but Uttaramimamsa, it has the same fault. Uttaramimamsa means if it's monism, then it has the same fault. It means all these systems have the same fault, because they all think it's not conscious only in connection with matter. Because the idea is that all of karma and jnana, the idea is consciousness is coming from matter. Like that. That's the weakness. They don't understand that consciousness is coming by the inherent nature of the jiva. Because if you're conscious spiritually, then you'd need to interact, you need to do things, you need a body, and they're all opposed to this concept of form. Right? So that's the idea, is they know that material has form, senses, activities, you know, feelings, emotions. So they give problems, so they can't understand the spiritual would be the opposite. You know, so the point is, if the state of spiritual existence would be so good, and you're doing nothing, why wouldn't the spiritual activities in that be better? You know, just like here, if you do nothing, you get bored. If you do something, it's better. So they can't quite catch. Yes.
So when Srila Rupa Goswami says Jnana Karmadhyana Vritta, he means all those schools.
All those schools. He means all six of them. Right? Means we can say the six schools of bogus philosophy, because then we're counting Vedanta as Shankara. Right? Or we can say there's five bogus and Vedanta is correct. But because Shankara is there within Vedanta, then Vedanta also gets represented in the bogus, mm-hmm. bogus line. So that's why then when you study the six systems, means you're studying the six systems because they're not appropriate, right? And then there's Vaishnava, philosophy. Yeah, but you also then have within Vedanta, you have the six schools of Vedanta, because you have Shankara, you have the four Sampradayas, and you have Chintaveda Veda Tattva. So that way you get six. So that's part two. This is part one. So this is and part two will be studying the more in detail of the Vedanta, because here it'll be more light, right? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Liberated is then desirable not as a state of bliss, but as the total cessation of pain. It is a state where the soul resides in its own intrinsic nature beyond pleasure and pain. Some later Vimamsakas hold, however, like the Advaitins, that liberation is an experience of joy. Otherwise, if you think about it, then why would you get rid of the pain, then what, right? So then if you understand that, then the next stage is it gives joy. So therefore they say Brahmananda. But the point is it still has the same fault. If you're not conscious, sep means, they'll say you're conscious, but you're the one consciousness. So it's somehow or another nice to be that one consciousness. But then what do you compare it to? Right? We're comparing that this is a place of pain, so if I get liberated, that'll be good. Right? Or I'm two, and if I merge, that'll be... So there's the idea of that there's two states, and then there's some adjustments with that. But the point is, when there's only one state, where is the bliss? Right? That's the problem. Okay, so footnote 28. The state of salvation is not a state of bliss, because bliss is a pleasant state of mind. But in salvation, no mind can exist. If it exists, as it is, its nature to be always active, the Atman cannot have a quietude, nirvana. And if it does not exist, the Atman cannot have any consciousness, and therefore the state of salvation is one without pleasure or pain, and without any consciousness. The Mimamsakas do not recommend such an unconscious existence as that of a stone to any person. So they gave to salvation only a lower place than a dutiful life of action. There is no credit in longing for salvation and in attaining it. That is why the life of a monk was not respected by the Mimamsakas. Right? So their idea means those ones that you have the thing of liberation, that would only be for those Mimamsakas that are not tired yet of, good facility. But if they're tired of that because it doesn't give it, then they might consider the liberation. But the problem is that they will consider it a lower state. So it doesn't really work out so good. If the one doesn't give you something pleasure, there must be something higher because you're looking for pleasure. Right?
Yes. Is this Subhadra Swami's note? Or
I'm not sure. It seems to be a quote from some. I think it keeps going.
Yeah.
Yes, it's this P.T. Raju.
Oh, the bottom. Okay,
it's just two different paragraphs.
Yeah. So when they consider this liberation state of existence, do they move to another school or they just remain Mimamsakas?
They're Mimamsakas. They're just now they're following sannyas, within the Varnashram system. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's grihasthas, then they're going to enjoy eternally. But then, I guess really, it means even there, as they take sannyas, it's just part of the thing
duty.
Yeah, duty. You're just performing your duty. So that's part of the thing. From there, then you go to the heavenly planets. So that's the idea. Mm-hmm. No? Yeah. So it's. But gradually, the followers of this school began to accept that the idea of salvation was higher than that of a dutiful action, that man should rise higher than the world of action. But they maintained that, so long as a man lived in this world, he should lead a life of action. But if action produces fruit, should he not be born again to enjoy this fruit? Then man should avoid all prohibited actions, and also those actions done with an objective like obtaining heaven, kamya karmas. He should perform only those actions that are daily duties. And finally, it means, in other words, the nitya kriyas of just your daily life, you know, getting up, brushing your teeth, you know, like that, putting your tilak like that. And finally, whatever actions he performs should be surrendered to God. Then, since no action in its latent form or in the form of merit or demerit remains in his atma, he will obtain liberation from the laws of the world of action. Right? So you have this idea, but as we said before, God is not so much of an important element within them, because either it's karma, it's just they're looking to get the fruit, so they're not really worried about how the mechanics of it work other than the mechanics to get it. Right? So, and at the same time as liberation, then you're also not worried about the person. So for them, it's not so important. But we see is this naishkarmya is a standard understanding of how you get liberated. Right? So the devotee is performing naishkarmya not to get liberated, but because if it's for yourself, how will it be for Krishna? Does that make sense? So you can see just by performing devotional service, you automatically get liberated, because it's automatically naishkarmya. Right? And it's offering to Krishna, so it's a good activity, so you automatically get the results of karma. So all the benefits of karma and jnana accrue to the devotee. But he's not doing it for that, because if he is, then it's not pure devotional service. You understand the thing? That's the point, is you can't have it and think you want it. When you don't want it, you can have it. Right? When you want it, you can't have it. It's just the way it works. Yes.
What happens if you start off, you come up with some idea that you want to do something for Krishna, and then by the time you think of the thing you want to do and you actually do it, you start thinking, your mind starts, you know, thinking about all the material benefits of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then so by the time you go to do it, you sort of have indulged in those thoughts already. So does that mean when you go to do, but you're originally still,
yeah, but his point is, as long as at the end it goes back to Krishna, then it doesn't matter. Because that's what the mind does. The mind does distract. That's what it's for.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? That's the material mind's business, is distraction. Right?
So would that still be classified as pure unalloyed devotional service?
No, pure unalloyed means that would be the state kind of prema. So pure unalloyed, you're talking, means we're endeavoring for that, but pure unalloyed comes within the platform of liberation. Within bhava, one gets from to the platform of pure unalloyed.
So that's a non-stop, like that's a constant.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of, so in other words, it's just that the absorption in Krishna and that isn't as complete as it could be. Like as we mentioned before, the meditation means there's occasional. Then what was it? There was occasional, then there was a different. The next two were similar. The next thing, I don't know. Means you had occasional, but it means it's not very often. Then it would be, there was the element of.
Constant?
Constant? Well, constant, then there's regular. And then there was. Yeah, I don't remember. Somehow that one doesn't stick. It's a. The yogic thing, but we use it. It's the same definition. You know, just like this nice karmia, we use the same definition. But samadhi is when it's deep, and then you have anusmriti, which means it's constant, but it's not as deep as samadhi. So then you have three before that, and the first one is it's irregular. Then it becomes more regular. And then it becomes, you know, then like that. So there's something that's in between. I don't remember. Okay, so here is that. Then they started to see, because they're performing these karmakanda activities. The idea you can always be happy just doing this, because it sounds great, right? You only perform pious activities, you'll only get pious results, right? So if you deal with those piously according to your duty, then eternally you'll go on enjoying, right? Sounds great. Right, but the problem is, Krishna mentions in Gita, every action is covered by fault. So that means there'll be something wrong in the performance of that good karma, and so that will give some result that's not so ideal. So after a while, and even if it is somehow or another, those moments of ideal, they don't last. And even if it's there, of course it can't last, but they're not that great. You know, in the beginning it'll be great, but after a while you find out they're not that great, because ultimately it's the soul who is having to be the one that's satisfied, right? The mind isn't the one that's satisfied. The mind's a mechanical element of our happiness. So we can't be happy that way. Does that make sense? We just can't be happy this way. Because the soul being eternal, everything here is temporary. It's just not going to work. Does that make sense? It can't work. So ultimately, then they're going to be dissatisfied. When they become dissatisfied, that's when they start looking towards the liberation side. So in the beginning, they're looking at liberation because I'm active, therefore the mind's there, I'm happy. So if I go to the liberated state, not that they don't understand that that's not there, it's an option because the Shastras will talk about it, but the point is you're not conscious. And so how would you be happy? So they would have that point. So you're only going to be conscious and happy here. So that's why they consider it a lower state. Right? It may be within the system of karmakanda, you're respecting them because they're sannyasis. Right? That's just your duty. But actually the position that they're going into is not theirs. So when they perform their karmakanda activity, they consider them higher. And this other state is you're stopping all that, so that's considered inauspicious. So when monks are around, they won't perform their karmakanda activities. Right? But then with time, they start to respect that position and see it as a higher position. But then that's only if it's Brahmananda. But the problem is if you're not conscious or don't have a mind, how will that happen? But somehow or another, they've just, you know, in their own mind, since this is not working, that's got to work. So then they make that adjustment. Right? You know. What to do? It happens.
Yeah. Well, performing sacrifice, this is the main ritual.
Right.
So when we perform our sacrifice, we say Idam Krishna, Idam Namma, Idam Guru, Idam Namma. Do they do the same?
It's Vedic to use that. But
so
all their meaning...
Idam Namma means not for me, then how is that working?
Because it means in this sacrifice here, this is not for me, this is for you. And now that I've given it to you, now you're supposed to give to me, you know, whatever it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like I come to you, I give you 1 rupee, you know. Okay. So where's my 1,000 rupees? I gave my rupee. Hey. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it means just at the moment, like we were saying before, is your successful materialist, he's functioning actually in his endeavor. The mechanics of the endeavor are actually have to be controlled by goodness. Because he has to perform the activities according to what actually works according to the laws and not be attached to the result right now. Because if he's attached to the result, he's thinking in the future. So he's not focusing on the present. So he's actually, the mechanics of it, he's doing in goodness. That's why it works. But as soon as he gets the results, then immediately the passion comes up and it's his. You understand? So,
yeah.
So you can only get success out of this world if you use the mode of goodness. Because you have to be focused on the moment and exactly see that all the elements come together. Yes.
So when we say mode of goodness, we're not talking about the intent. We're just talking.
We're not
about
talking about the intent.
Activity.
We're not talking about the consciousness. We're just talking about the endeavor. It's not that it's situated in goodness, but it's using the mode of goodness to function.
Yeah. So passion.
It's just like in the mode of goodness, you're focusing on the. You see the knife, the potato in your fingers, right? You know. But when you think about the future or the past, you don't. You get cut. Right. You understand? So, means in other words, this full means what we're meaning by goodness, meaning present.
Yeah. Yeah.
Future is passion, past is ignorance.
Yeah.
We're not meaning that, like you're saying, the intent is goodness or the ingredients are goodness or it's according to. No, all it is that you're in the present, you're following the laws of nature. That's why you're getting the result. But the point is now whether you're supposed to get that result or whether you're supposed to be doing the endeavor to get that result, that's another consideration. Right? So therefore you'll get the reaction of that. You know what I'm saying? Like the thief is, it means means the money is in the cash register, right? Now, if you want the money out of the cash register, you have to open the cash register and put your hand in and take the money out. That's just, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, that's the system. So if the thief is doing that, he has the money, right? So he was focused on the present. He actually went to the cash register, right? He didn't go over to the soda machine, right? Like that. And so, and he opened it. He actually put it in his hand, right? Means, point is, hand must go. Yeah, okay, that's there. But then the problem is those little things, and all that. It gets into, so the point is he's got the money, okay? So he was focused and on the present, and that's why he got it. Now, other considerations now, is he supposed to be doing that? That's another thing. Yeah. So that's the, by his verbal cognition, he feels he has a right to do that. But somehow or another, the policeman doesn't seem to agree with his philosophy. like that. And neither does the store owner. He doesn't either. Now, the guy standing in the line, he doesn't really care, as long as he doesn't take all the small notes, because otherwise he has a bigger note and he needs change. Right? Like that. And he doesn't blow your head off because you're a witness like that.
But those are other considerations.
Yeah, those are secondary considerations. So.
Maharaj, yes. So the reason this idea that I do something, automatically I get the result, comes from our absorption, the mechanics of this material world?
That, but also the element that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So I control it because I did it, then I'm in control of it, and the results are mine. So it goes back to that original false ego. All it is that the karmi mimamsakas are willing to do it through nice work. Right? That's all.
Are they the only ones?
Huh?
Are they the only ones who are prepared to do this through the nice work?
No, I mean, others are means there, but you'll see is that theirs is the most complete. Because the nice work on, how they're sleeping, where they're sleeping, they consider vastu considerations, the directions, getting up, the cleanliness of the floor, what side of the bed to get at, what foot they put on the floor first, all this thing, you got out of the wrong side of the bed, or put your best foot forward. These are actually Veda considerations, right? Because the best foot means your right foot, don't put the left foot, right? So all these different things, they brush your teeth, it's proper, what it is, all these different things, how they take the bath, how they clean their clothes, how they dress, their tilak. So they're doing all that. So even if you have others who are trying to do good work, one, is it Vedic? Is it authorized by scripture? And two, is, even if it's not, is it at least according to the laws of nature? Right? But then the problem is if you're not getting it for Shastra, how will you think about all those things connected? You know what I'm saying? Like there is another, I don't think there's a barucha for brushing your teeth. Right?
It must be kosher.
Huh? Oh, that's another thing. But the point is there isn't one, or blowing your nose, or so there's a limit on how much is there, Does that make sense? Putting a new roll of toilet paper, it's like that. You're standing there. it'll be you're doing the thing, give me that. it's not going to work out so good, right? Yeah. Yes.
The reason Kali Mansa is superior to yoga is it considers more of the Veda.
It considers more of the Veda. That's why the order that we're putting is how much of the Vedic philosophy and consideration is it? Because otherwise, they're all bogus. So it's not that one is more bogus than the other. It's not like, the bazooka is more bogus than the missile launcher. Or the, how you said, AK-47 is more bogus than the AK-74. The point is it's, they're all bogus. Right? And as some a practitioner, one may advance more nicely or not, according to their own commitment to it. But the point is nyaya is the least. It's only considering logic. Right? For Vaisheshika is logic and then the structure of the universe by atoms. So there's more. Right? Now, the analyzation of how all those atoms come together and produce things that we actually interact with, right, is then more. right? Because we accept that everything's just atoms and everything goes back to the atoms. But the point is you're dealing with more like that. Does that make sense? It means if you're going to get liberated, it's not just thinking that it all goes back into atoms. That means if you can do that, great. Like that, you know? Does that make sense? But the point is you in your position have to be able to get there. And therefore, Shankya is higher because it will analyze the elements of the world and how those are functioning, how they came from those original elements. Right? And so then if you pack it, then you can get back to there. So it works. But yoga then, but that, all that's just considering intellect, all those first three. But yoga considers the mind. So then that's going to be more complete because actually the mind is technically controlling the intelligence. Right? It's doing the management of the whole scene. So it's higher. And then karma is higher because it considers more aspects of life because yoga is very limited. You have to go off and sit in the middle of nowhere to actually apply it. This one can be applied right in city life with other people and you can have a whole social system and everything like that. You know, so it's not only the mind but also all the emotions, the duties, the things and that. So it's more complete. All right? But then that the element of the aspect of Brahman and transcendence is very weak in it. While then Vedanta, then that has all that into it, right? So then that makes it higher. But still Vedanta without Krishna consciousness has missed the whole point of knowing everything. If you don't understand everything in relationship to developing love for God, then you've missed the point. So that's why then these six are considered bogus, right? They're theistic in that they follow the Vedas and everything like that and the Vedic authority. But the problem is their understanding of God and relationship with God has serious problems.
A few pages back, Prabhupada is making a footnote, a comment that he starts with karma, dhyana, and yoga, and then he finally gets to bhakti. As
right.
In that perspective, he's taking how much of connection to God in each one it's taken.
That's there. It's also taken is how much connection to God and how much detachment there is from the world. Right? Because karma develops jnana and vairagya, so it's the next natural step. Because then it's knowledge of your position and detachment from material endeavor that keeps you here. In other words, you're bound here by your material attachment. So if you give up material attachment, that's better. You're less bound here. So in one sense, you can say it's farther, closer to Krishna on the path between Krishna and hell, right? But the problem is even though the situation is better, it's not necessarily always that the mentality is better. Because then that false ego, I'm the controller and enjoyer, may be increasing. Like you see, a pious person has more attitude than necessary, someone who doesn't have so much facility. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem, is that you have the activity that gets the results, and you have the situation, but then they have your mentality by which you're doing it, you know, or what you do with it once you get it. You know, so that whole combination, that's where it gets complicated. If it were just so simple, then it would be easy, right? Does that make sense? Because we're so used to looking at everything in a particular perspective, it takes time to change that perspective. Does that make sense? You know, like now we can read something and understand it to a greater depth than in earlier years, and with minimal or more direct or more the questions are more directly on the topic. Like when we go back in the previous years, it would much of the time be something connected to the topic, you know, or a word in the topic, or, you know what I'm saying, and that it would go on, you know, like that. But after a while, we start to see, oh, this is what the Vedas are talking about. And so it becomes more and more clear. Right? So it just, yeah. So, somewhere? Okay. So, six, Vedanta, the conclusion of the Vedic revelation. In the introduction of this book is to explain that the Upanishads are the subject of the fourth and final degree of Vedic scholarship. Therefore, the Upanishads are known as Vedanta, the conclusion of the Veda, right? Vedanta, the end of the Veda. Right, because then the Samhita is the first, the brahmacharis are memorizing that. Then the brahmana are next, that means the grihasthas are applying that Samhita that they learned as a brahmachari in performing Vedic rituals, right? Then the aranyakas, that's the vanaprasthas, and they analyze what's the actual metaphysics about that, what's going on in the whole universal kind of thing when you're doing these rituals. Like that. And then the fourth stage is the Upanishads, where it's what's beyond the metaphysical into the transcendental. You understand? So therefore it's called Vedanta, the end of knowledge.
All right, this Vedanta is according to Shankara?
This, I'm not sure. This is just general.
It's more Vaishnava, but Shankara is kind of mentioned there.
Yeah, this is kind of like an overview of Vedanta. Then part two will be in detail study of the six schools of Vedanta.
Because if it's bogus.
No, in here it's not exactly bogus. Like that, because what we're doing is studying Vedanta on its own. Like that. So therefore then the bogusness will be, it means you'll touch on it here. Don't worry, we'll touch on it. Like that. But the bogusness will be studied more in the part two. Like that. Because then the idea is now you're comparing the six schools to each other. But then in the next study, we'll compare the schools within Vedanta to each other. So we're not getting so much into, you know, the different schools of Nyaya, the different schools of Yoga, and things like that. You know, because basically they're all bogus, like that. So, like that. Does that make sense? And if you understand the principle of it, you understand how to deal with it. Because they're all connected, that. Because generally when we give the principle, it includes all the schools. But one school will take something and make it more prominent, or... Okay. Karma Mimamsa philosophy arose from the earlier study of the ritualistic portions of the Vedas, and so it is also known as Purva Mimamsa. Purva means before, and Antya means after. So you have Purva Mimamsa and
Uttara
Mimamsa, means after. The prior deliberation. Vedanta is called Uttara Mimamsa, the higher deliberation. And also as Brahma Mimamsa, deliberation on Brahman, the absolute truth. The word Upanishad means that which is learned by sitting close to the teacher. The text, because Upa means to be near. The text of the Upanishads are extremely difficult to fathom. They're to be understood only under the close guidance of a spiritual teacher, Guru. Because the Upanishads contain many apparently contradictory statements, the great sage Vyas, also known as Vedavyas, Bhadarayana and Dvaipayana, systematized the Upanishadic teachings in the Vedanta Sutra, or Brahma Sutra. Right? So it means they're very difficult to understand because the language is used, and they're dealing with these very, very broad, you know, deep philosophical understandings, but they're saying them according to Vedic language. So Vedic language is very poetic and very obscure. That's just the way it's done. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's not that, just like, let's say, before, you know, 2,000 years ago, the time, you know, when Jesus was around. It means that he spoke like that because everybody spoke like that. You know, they talk about this and the shepherd and, you know, all kinds of these things, this allegories and alluding to things, and it's poetic and it's, you know, that's just the way people talked then. Right? So the Vedas are even therefore more than that. It's not on the platform of just morality and ethics, but it's on the platform of transcendence. So therefore you're taking that kind of talking and connect that with transcendence. So it becomes very difficult to understand. So that's why it must be studied next to the teacher, right? Because every verse then needs explanation, right? It's not that you've gotten the basics, so now you read, and so now you can catch it, right? So that was the idea, is that it required more like that. So now the Vedanta Sutra, now that's put into classical Sanskrit. So then, though it's poetically present, it's more direct in what it's saying. Does that make sense? You may say, oh, but poetry is indirect, but it's very obvious what you're talking about. You know, it's romantic poetry. It's about romance, though it may use interesting kind of ways of putting it together. But in the Vedas, it goes, means just like, let's say, give an example, is that the verse on praise of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. In the same verse, it talks about him as Sesha, as Sadashiva, as Balaram, you know, as Ananta, as Karanodakshay Vishnu, you know, every like this. So how do all those connect together and everything like that and all the different aspects? So means everything about, you know, Balaram as a tattva is explained there, but that's in one verse, 32 syllables, right? So now, to be able to understand all that, you need a teacher, because you could be talking for weeks and months to explain all of that. Like we see is that he has 14 verse opening. So then he takes him, you know, basically up to where he gives the Lord's pastimes. And the Adi Lila is just explaining the first 14 verses. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. So the idea is that there's so much there, but it's done like that, but it's not, the language is not very direct. Well, in classical, it'll be more direct. It's more clear what it's about. Does that make sense? So that's just the nature between basically, you can say, Shruti and Smriti. Smriti makes it more obvious, you know, more accessible, while the Shruti, it's less. It's not that it can't be accessible, it's just harder, like that, without direction. Okay. The Vedanta Sutra is divided into four chapters. Samanvaya, which explains the unity of the philosophy of the Upanishads. Avirodha, which dispels apparent contradictions. Sadhana, which describes the means to attain the supreme. And Phala, which indicates the goal. So he sees there's two on Sambandha, one on Abhideya, one on Prayojana. Right? So in other words, how it's all together, and then what are the contradictions that make you think it's not altogether? Right? In other words, he's proving that the Upanishads, there's only one philosophy. Mm. Right? So anything that contradicts that, which is the six schools, right? That's what he deals with. So the Vedanta Sutra is actually an in-depth dealing of these six schools. So we will come up with this again, right? So in the seventh year, then we'll deal with this again. Right? But on that level of Vedanta Sutra. Right? That's the.
Okay. Maharaj, you mentioned one time that verse Ak, and you said there's a big commentary. Ak.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's there. At Patanjali Sutta, that's in Patanjali. Okay. So it's Ak, you know, like that. It just goes on forever about Ak, like that. But only one Ak. If you say it many times, then that's Martian. Yeah, like that. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. That's so. You have to know the difference. Okay. But Vyasa's sutras are very terse. Without a fuller explanation, their meaning is difficult to grasp. So even this, where they're just writing it in a very essential point, it's very hard to grasp. In India, there are five main schools of Vedanta, each established by an acharya who explained the sutras in a Bhashya commentary. Of the five schools or sampradayas, one, namely Shankara's, is impersonal. This means that the Supreme Being is explained in impersonal terms as being nameless, formless, and without characteristics. The schools of Ramanuja, Madhva, Nimbarka, and Vishnuswami explain God in personal terms. These acharyas and their followers have very exactingly formulated a philosophy that dispels the sense of mundane limitation associated with the word person, and establishes transcendental personalism in terms of eternity, endless knowledge, complete bliss, absolute all-attractive form, and all-encompassing love. Right? Because they're trying to, means the Shankaras, they're trying to say that person is a limited term. So therefore, you're limiting by time and space. So how can you do that to Brahman? So the Acharyas are showing how person does not mean that it has to be material and limited by time and space. So therefore, you can have unlimited in the way of person. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. So because the argument's going to be over that, right? Because it's all Brahman, we don't have a problem with that, because everything is Brahman. But then there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Brahman, right? That's what they don't understand. They don't catch that point. Each of the five Vedantist sampradayas is known for its siddhanta, or essential conclusion, about the relationships between God and the soul and matter, matter and matter, matter and God, and the soul and souls, right? Because you have three elements, so the relationship between all of them. So that's what Prabhupada mentioned, that sambandha, is to understand the relationship between God, the living entity, and the material energy. Right? So then it means you can get all these. He doesn't mention God and God here. So that would be the sixth, right? You know?
Advaita, Acharya, and Nityananda.
Yeah, like that. That's God and God. Shankara Siddhanta is Advaita, non-difference, i.e. everything is one, therefore these five relationships are unreal. All the other Siddhantas support the reality of these relationships from various points of view. Ramanuja Siddhanta is Vishishta Dwait, qualified non-difference. Madhva Siddhanta is Dwait, difference. Vishnu Swami Siddhanta is Shuddha Dwait, purified non-difference. And Nimbarka Siddhanta is Dwait Advait, difference and identity.
Will we study them
again? To some degree, yeah. It means how many pages is it?
70 pages.
70, so it's basically twice the size of this.
Because qualified non-difference, purified non-difference.
Yeah, yeah. No, we'll get into all that. Yeah. But I'm saying this is we've done in what, like 50 some pages. So that's 70 some pages. So it's more. So don't worry. Yes.
Mara, I just wonder, because all the studies depend so much on the teacher.
Yeah.
And according to the school that the teacher follows and the student follows.
Yes.
But then with the ability that we coming from a certain background, then with, as we mentioned before, we don't have any, or actually we have bad samskaras and all that, then what is our ability actually to choose the right teacher and then follow, you know, any of those?
The point is that once sincere, then Krishna puts you in contact with bona fide teacher. That's the point. So depending on what you want, then that's what you get. The point is Lord Chaitanya came to give the highest. So if you want that, you take it. If you want something else, then there's other lines. You know? And then there's bona fide and not bona fide. You know, so any of the Vaishnava lines are bona fide. But the point is if you want what's never been given before, then you stick to this line. And if you're just happy getting to the spiritual world, then you have the other line.
But sincerity is not a state of mind or intellect or anything.
No, it's a nature. It's just whether how much the soul is committed to. So it's nothing to do with the mundane. It's whether the soul is committed to that endeavor. Does that make sense? So simply, if one sincerely wants it, then one will get it. Because that's all we have is desire. So it's on the quality of desire is what you get. Because the soul technically doesn't do anything because he's so small that he desires to take part in something. The energy that's bigger than him that he's taken shelter of makes the arrangements. So whether it's the external or internal, it's still arranged by a bigger energy. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it all comes down to desire. You want it, you get it. You want prema, you'll get it. You know, if it's you want prema, but you know, now it's time for this or that, or you know, packing lunch for the kids, or you know, stuff like that. Then it's there, but these other things are also there. So that's why lunch has been packed and we didn't get prema. You know, because the desire was for that. Now, if you combine the two, as you're seeing, here's devotees serving devotees like this and that, then you know you're getting the you can work with them at the same time. You know what I'm saying? So there's quality of the consciousness of how you're viewing and all that. That's why the study, then you improve the quality of what you're understanding and how you make the decisions and all those things, because you're adjusting your identity. Right? So when you adjust your identity, that's your final point you make a decision by. Right? Like that. And then because you're now doing proper work, therefore the mind's getting purified. Right? Because the samskars are better. Right? You know, all those desires go down. So then they're not options that the mind functions from. So it's just ultimately the whole thing comes down to simply desire. But to convince us of that, then you know we have so much, you know, volume of literature. But that's all it's trying to do, is convince us that we're simply servants of Krishna. That's all. Is that, like that. So all these are just different philosophies to try to seem that you are progressive, but at the same time so you can remain in within the material consciousness. Like that. You know, because the soul wants something higher, so that need is there, so naturally philosophy comes up. You know, as Prabhupada points out, even the aboriginal has some philosophy and some idea of supreme, even though he may find it simply in just a simple surrounding, you know. You know, nature itself, or a big tree, or a big rock, or, you know, crocodiles, or, you know, something. You know, I think there's one group where all their ancestors are crocodiles, so they worship crocodiles, because they say after death everyone becomes a crocodile, which is a good chance, they do. You know what I'm saying? So, but there's some idea like that. It's just the need of the soul. Right? But the covering isn't less enough that aspect comes out, but the animals are covering so heavy that doesn't come out. So beyond eating, sleeping, mating, defending, they don't get into it. Is that?
Yeah. It's interesting in the story of Gopkumar. He got philosophical study, you know, on a very late stage in his spiritual, when he traveled all the up and then he came back to Mathura, and then from the local Brahmanas, he actually studied all the philosophy, although he traveled, you know, not to Vaikuntha, just before he went to Vaikuntha, then just before that he wasn't really educated, he was just chanting that mantra. And that's mm-hmm. That was basically.
But that point is, he has that faith. But the idea is that faith, along with proper understanding and proper endeavor, then will give a very nice result. You know? So it's always recommended. Mm-hmm. Like that. So here's, that's why Prabhupada wanted devotees to study. Then you don't have to go through all those planets to come to the point of study. You can just do it right here. No?
Thank you.
Save the troubles.
Yeah, you don't have to go and be Indra and this one and that one. And
be Brahma for a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't have to do all that.
For a while.
Yeah, you just have to.
Maybe we went through that already.
Huh?
Sorry for
you. Yeah, it means basically it means whatever's there in the 8,400,000, we've, you know, been there, done that. You know,
so. At least once.
Yeah, at least once. Yeah. I mean, if you're down here, then there's a good chance you did it once. If you got four heads now, you could have done that, or you might have. That might be your first birth. You know, and if your father or grandfather is the guy with four heads, then you know it may be your second birth. Like that. Does that make sense? So that seems to be, you know, that, you know, or third birth is the great sages, and then it's 8,400,000 later, then there's, you know,
Haribol.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's either you figure it out in those first three, or it's kind of like you go through the whole thing.
Well, yeah. As you mentioned, like the six philosophical system, the bogus, right? It's still on that point. I'm trying to
Well, here is explaining it in its correct terms. This is an overview of what the Vedanta is. So it's not specifically discussing Shankara now. It's just discussing what is Vedanta. And it's very just an overview of, therefore, the different schools.
Okay, so it's trying to reconcile the element of these philosophies considering Shankara's Vedanta. They keep you here. And when Prabhupada says that the combination of all kinds of yoga practice lies in bhakti yoga, and then he describes all the yoga. On one hand, Prabhupada is saying that there are steps towards bhakti, and now we're looking at another angle, which is just saying that they keep you here. So I was trying to...
No, but see, it's yoga where it's just being done not in devotion to the Lord that will keep you here. Yoga done in connection with the Lord, that will get you out of here. See, because what we have to understand is these six schools are derivatives of the Veda. But the Veda's only purpose is bhakti. So that means, as derivatives of there, that means what is all the elements that are derived are actually in their natural form part of bhakti. Just that you're applying the Vedic system without devotion. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like you buy, you know, a station wagon. That's so that you can pack the family in it or go down and buy groceries. That's what it's for. You know what I'm saying? Yeah? That's its natural state. But it's not that when the kids get a hold of the keys that they don't probably do that. Other than filling up the car with, you know, maybe their friends. But, you know what I'm saying? It's being applied differently than what it's actually meant for. So the Vedic activities, the Vedic knowledge is meant to understand and serve the Supreme Lord. But they're taking these elements and using them for their own ends. So they have these various six schools of philosophy of how to, you know, which aspects of the Vedic, of bhakti, and how, you know, to use, and what would be the misinterpretation of that. Right? Does that make sense? But they're complete in themselves as taking their basis, then everything that they deal with, you know, whatever's their sphere, it's consistent. You know what I'm saying? So it's consistently bogus in that particular way. But there's no inconsistencies within itself like that. But when you compare it to actual what it's for, then the inconsistencies come out. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So in logic, everything is logical. Does that make sense? So like that. That's what I was saying. That's why they're brought out, because these are the six ways you could interpret. Now, from that, as people take parts of this, parts of that, and put together their own philosophy, so like that, you generally end up basically with 26 schools. Right? Does that make sense? So another 20 schools are added. Those 20 are actually just derivatives of various parts of the six. You know what I'm saying? Like you go to the yoga studio, they're talking Patanjali and Shankara. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, as many times, they're talking about how it'll be good, your work, and all. So they're talking karma. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that they're just taking whatever they want from whatever and putting it together and making their own scene. You know, is this predominantly one thing or the other? But it actually is all mixed.
This 26, which you mentioned, is within Vedic, let's say.
No. That's counting. The six are specifically Vedic. Then you have these other 20 are just general categories. You may find them kind of within the Vedic, but most of the time they may be found outside. Like that. So what it does is it accommodates whatever is there in world philosophies and religions. Right? In other words, the 26 accommodates that. But that means from, you know, your ancient up to now. So all your, you know, how you say, you know, polytheism, you know, monotheism, like that, no theism, you know, whatever it is, you know, it's all there. Like that. You know. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. The Bengali branch of Madhva Sampradaya is known as the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya or the Chaitanya Sampradaya. In the 1700s, this school presented Indian philosophers with a commentary on Vedanta Sutra written by Baladeva Vidyabhushan that argued yet another Siddhanta. It is known as the Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, which means simultaneous, inconceivable oneness and difference. In recent years, the Siddhanta has become known to people from all over the world due to the popularity of the books of Srimad A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So then in this way, there's six, right? So five is ones from before. It means there was Shankara and then the four Vaishnava Sampradayas. So we're a branch of one Sampradaya, but we have our own, how do you say? Commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Because that was the thing, is if you're considering yourself, it means you either follow the Madhva line. If you're not, then how are you bona fide? You know, because where's your Vedanta commentary? Mm-hmm. So then Baladeva Vidyabhushan, then with Govindaji, they put one together. Yeah.
It means that you follow Madhva up to Madhavendra Bhut?
We follow Madhva up to that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as opposed to, you know, Vishnu or like that.
So we follow only part of there.
We're in that line. In other words, the chit potency is coming there, but the interpretation of it, the understanding is more detailed. Because they only have dwait, but we have the advait, and it's dwait and advait at the same time. So that's the part that they don't catch. So the dwait aspects are the same.
Why don't we have our own sampradaya?
You don't need.
Well, it's a different philosophy. It's not slightly different.
No, means Achinta Beda Tattva is the philosophy, and these other four are simply parts of that. But because it's coming from the Supreme and it's transcendental, it's complete in itself. Right? Om Purnamada Purnamidam. So anything coming from the complete whole is complete in itself. So their philosophy is complete in itself, though all these four philosophies are found in the Achinta Beda Veda Tattva. So you could say the other four become absorbed into us. Like that. So then, yes.
Maharaj, the Lord Chaitanya actually appeared to each one and said which part.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yeah. And whether their followers understand that's another thing. But
do they accept that?
I have no idea. Individuals I've seen, pandits within the line, know that we're the next, you know, natural progression. But I don't think it's common in the Sampradaya itself. But individual pandits within the Sampradayas have that realization. Yes.
So this is Krishna's program to launch the golden age.
Yes, yes. Because he's the lord of the... Means one might complain, but the point is Lord Chaitanya is the avatar of the age.
Yeah.
So he's naturally prominent. So therefore his philosophy will naturally be the prominent philosophy. So he's control of what happens in the age. So they can't, in that way they can't really complain. Right? If they say, well, you're just another, you know, why you? It's just like, hey, he's the you avatar. Work it out with him. You know, it's like, you got to complain. Then it's like, you know, it's like, okay. Sambandha. God is the origin of everything. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all blissful due to being the reservoir of unlimited positive transcendental attributes, such as beauty, wealth, fame, strength, knowledge, and renunciation. Matter is inferior energy of God. The soul is superior energy of God. Abhideya. Devotional service to God is the process for attaining the ultimate goal of life. Prayojana. The ultimate goal of life is the development of the dormant love of God. Sambandha. So this is what's over all of all the Vaishnava Sampradayas. Yeah. So it means, yeah.
Well, there are certain peculiar doctrines of Madhva, which are
unique in themselves. Okay. Yeah. But I'm saying basically this represents everybody. Sambandha, the nature of God. The first code of the Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, which means now therefore. Yes. 52. Okay. Now therefore, let us inquire into Brahman, the Absolute. This Vyasa's directive to Brahmanas, who have tired of the Vedic Kamyakamas, the rituals aimed at a material benefits, which yield only limited and temporary fruits. It's interesting what you're saying. It says that when in Jaimini opens his Jaimini Sutras with, what was it?
Atato Dharma Jigyasa.
Atato Dharma Jigyasa. Now it's time to inquire about Dharma. Right. So once you've gotten tired of that, now it's Atato Brahma Jigyasa. That's interesting how he did that. So, footnote 29. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan writes in his commentary to the first sutra. In this sutra, the word atta means now, and the word ataha means therefore. Right, because you have a tato, which means atta. Ata ataha, right? So that becomes the tato because then it's followed by Brahma. So it's all the grammar. It comes out like that. Ata, now, when a person has properly studied the Vedic literatures, understood its meaning, adhered to the principles of Varnashram Dharma, observed the vow of truthfulness, purified his mind and heart, and obtained the association of a self-realized soul, he is qualified to inquire about Brahman. That might count us out, that one. As for your previous question. So, in other words, that's where Prabhupada said, he has made our fortune. Because yeah. Otherwise, this is the fortune you require. So, not having that exactly.
How do you get there without inquiring about Brahman?
You associate with those who have.
It means for here. Yeah.
In the natural.
Means when a person has
is qualified to inquire about Brahman, but he won't inquire about Brahman until he comes in contact with somebody who is absorbed in Brahman.
But how would you study the Vedas without inquiring about Brahman?
You can study the Vedas from the Karmakanda or like that.
From the six schools, right?
Yeah. Means that's all they do is study the Veda.
Just okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But understood the meaning is the next thing.
Yeah, well, that would be in your Brahmanas on Aranyakas. So now that he's done that and understood the higher things like that, now he's ready to inquire about Brahman. Right. So then here also the Vedic literature, we all mean, you know, in this way we mean the Samhita Brahmanas Aranyakas. Mm. Right. So now he's ready to inquire about Brahman and understand the Upanishads.
Okay. Oh,
I
like that. Yeah.
Yeah? You understand? That. Yeah. Yeah.
Usually the Vedic literatures are in the form of dialogues.
Yes.
And this one, Vinata
Sutra? It's kind of a dialogue, but it means it's kind of more, I guess, more of a monologue.
Who's speaking?
Vyasadeva. He's just going through and explaining that these are the points, and Jaimini says this, so we say that, and you know, and Patanjali says this. This is what we would say, and like this. So he goes through all the different schools.
So he's born there for. It's like strange beginnings of the book. It's like continuation of something.
Yeah, it means it's the continuation of the Vedic literature. It's Vedanta.
So this is
the means having studied all this before. Okay. Now it's time to inquire about the Supreme. Right? But what he's doing is that what you would find in each of the Upanishads, he's put that together into the sutras. That's why it still requires commentary on that.
And the next question then, why would it be considered a natural commentary?
Because the Vedanta Sutra is the consolidation of the, you know, the essence of the Upanishadic presentation, right? So the Upanishads are the conclusion of the Veda. And so all the different, from all the Upanishads, then the Vedanta Sutras brought out the essence of them and put them into one consistent presentation, right? So that makes it there. Then Krishna, he spoke to Brahma, the Veda, the whole Veda. And so, having heard the whole Veda, then Brahma asked, okay, now I have all this knowledge. What's the essence? What is the way to view the whole Vedic literature? Right? Does that make sense? So Vedanta means how to view the Vedic literature. And Brahma asked Krishna for how do I view this whole thing? So he gave him the Chaturshloki. Right? So Bhagavatam is an expansion of that Chaturshloki. So the Chaturshloki is the essence of the Veda. The Vedanta Sutra is taken from the Upanishads as the essence of the Veda. So therefore it's the natural commentary. That's why it doesn't say the direct commentary. It's the natural commentary. Is that you know. Okay, then 29. Put not 29. We were already reading that. Okay. Ataha. Therefore, because material piety brings results of material sense happiness, which is inevitably limited and temporary, and because the transcendental form of the Lord, which is realized by the proper attainment of real transcendental knowledge, and which is full of imperishable, limitless bliss, eternity, transcendental knowledge, and all the transcendental attributes, brings eternal bliss to the devotee beholder. Therefore, one should renounce all material pious duties for attaining material sense gratification and inquire about Brahman by studying the four chapters of Vedanta Sutra. Okay? Make sense? Right? In other words, now, so you've studied all these things, you're practicing the lifestyle, you're doing all the Vedic things like that nicely, but now it's time to inquire about the Brahman. Because, you know, the therefore is because all that material piety can't actually satisfy the soul. You do all those things nicely, it's not actually on the transcendental platform. So now it's time to ask about the transcendental platform, because you're already doing the material. Right? So now you should know that. Does that make sense? It's not that you need to do the material first, because the soul is by nature transcendental. So that's how we kind of like squeak under the wire. Is that because the soul, it's its nature to do that. So our problem in doing it is not understanding the philosophy. That's not the problem at all. The problem is basically the culture of practice of that philosophy. That's our weakness. Right? Does that make sense? So we see here is that they have, right, they've studied, they adhere to the principles, right? So, you know, like that. So study is not one of the strong attributes of the, you know, the Malecha, like that. Adhering to principles of Varnashram, that's definitely not, you know, forget that one. Observing the vow of truthfulness, you know, not necessarily, you know, like that. You know, so that means that unless you consider, you know, like P. Diddy or somebody like that as truth, then, you know, then yes, you're a child. But if you don't, then, you know, you got a problem. Purified his mind and heart, that one definitely is not in the in the cards.
That's cool.
And attain the association of self-realized soul, right? You know, so I mean, depends. I don't know if, you know, Mr. Marley, maybe he's self-realized. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so there's no association. So there's very little qualification. But the nature of the soul is transcendence. Therefore, despite this, one can still surrender to the Lord. It just means in these areas of study, of, you know, following principles of social life, you know, regularity, truthfulness, purification, like that, association with advanced personality. These are where our weaknesses come up. Does that make sense? Right? It means, you know, why do we have to respect, you know, serious people? You know, why do we, you know, it's being fanatic about doing all these different things like that. Truthfulness means, you know, is it in the newspaper? Is it a fact? You know, like that. Principles of Varnashram Dharma, isn't that a bit archaic, you know, and stuff like that. And study, yes, of course, as long as it's a PhD or something. But if it's, you know, spiritual, that's another thing. You understand? So we see as these exact things is where the weakness is. But that doesn't actually means if we're attached to them, then it can block the advancement. But it's not by not having these that one can't advance, because the soul, being spiritual, it's its nature to be on the transcendental platform. It just means socially there'll be problems until one becomes purified. The more you're purified, the less these problems are there. Yes.
Before you address that, the normal civilized citizen would, by culture, come to the philosophical, and we have gone to the philosophical, then...
Then we do it backwards. Point is, as long as it gets done, you know, it's like, you know, that's the whole... Yeah. Means our qualification... Means, in other words, these take piety. Lacking piety, it's only through devotional piety that we gain this piety. But on its own, we don't have the piety to cultivate this kind of piety. Right? You know, money generates money, so piety generates piety. So we don't have the capital, right? The piety capital. So there's nothing to invest. You know, you know, it's like what we're saying. So it's that they tell us the two businessmen like that, and so there was a discussion. Oh, it means there was a young man, and he was asking, what about, you know, ethics, you know, in business? And so then the older businessman, okay, so I'll you know, let us discuss this. So he says, okay, there's two partners in business, right? So one partner's in the shop, one partner's not there. So someone comes into the shop, buys something, but somehow by accident he gives more money than he should have, and he leaves, so he doesn't know that he gave more money, okay? Now comes the ethical question. Okay. Does he tell his partner or not? Right? That's Canal Street, right? So
Is that? Yes.
I was just thinking that maybe we can fill that gap of all this, that whatever was missing in qualification, just by worship of Srila Prabhupada as a founder acharya. So this is the essential part.
That's the sense, because that then fulfills the attain the association of a self-realized soul. So that means Prabhupada, anybody following Prabhupada, and it like this. So that fills that gap. Right? Then the program that he gives, it means we're studying the Vedic literature, it means we're studying the Gita, Bhagavatam that he's given, like that. Adhere to the principles of Varnashram Dharma, so then what principles have been given to us, you know, our morning and evening program, our basics in our life, like that. Observe the vow of truthfulness, we try to, truth means Krishna, so we try to connect everything to Krishna. Purifying the mind and heart by the devotional process, that will be done. You know, but we're also very careful to see that we don't do something that's out of it. So in this way, we do all of them. It's already included within devotion. That's what we're saying. Is now what he's saying here is that someone who's done this separately from devotion, like now you've done all that, you're purified, you're qualified, but so now it's time to inquire about the Supreme, because now you've been wasting your time. But for the devotee, he, by following devotional service, he gets all this automatically. You know what I'm saying? So what it means is it's already part of the process, so all this is being practiced and all this will be gained. But the most essential point is bhakti. So that means he's done all this, hasn't done any bhakti. Right? It's just like in the yoga process. They can do this whole system and then at the very end include Paramatma. While our system, we include the Lord, not in Paramatma, but Bhagavan, from the very beginning. So we're getting the benefit right from the beginning. So the devotional process already contains all the other processes of karma, jnana, and jnana. Right? They already can, there. So then one gets all the benefit. So if we just stick to following Prabhupada's instructions, all this benefit is given. So that way we don't have to worry. But always, the comment was that, but we may have some social difficulties because of not having had that previously. Does that make sense? Yeah.
The discussion about Prachina Bhaisat now is the opposite, right? He has all this.
Yes. But now it's time for it. Therefore, now he should inquire about the Supreme. So in other words, he's like that. Rachina Bharhi. Nriga is like that. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know. Like that. The Prachetas. You know. So they've done all these things. Now having done that, now what? You know, that's the whole point. You know, what's next? So yeah. You had something?
You're saying that so pious activities bring like good karmic results.
Yes.
So they're not favored. But what about
that's both? Water. Not grace. <this.
laughs> But
that's a muda.
So aren't activities in the mode of goodness, which you just said is beneficial, isn't that pious? Wouldn't that be pious?
It is. But the point is pious activities engaged in Krishna's service, that's devotional. But pious activities on their own are not. Just like we're saying, a pile of potatoes, you know, is nice. They're organic potatoes. They're free-range potatoes, right? No one bothered them. They could move around as they pleased, right? Like that, you know? Does that make sense? You know, there was fair trade. You know, we did give that little kid, you know, how you say, you know, 10 cents, you know, like that. And, you know, and in his country, you know, he's a millionaire, right? You know, whatever it is. You know, so it works. But the point is that it's still only pious and it'll bind you to this world. But now if you take those potatoes and offer it to Krishna, that's what's transcendental. You know what I'm saying? Now let's say if we have chemically grown, you know, not free-range potatoes, right? So they grew up in a, you know, a rubber tire or something, yeah, a plastic bag or something like that. So still, you offer them to Krishna, that devotion of offering them, that will bring you to the transcendental platform. You know what I'm saying? The only difference is one's nicer to offer than the other, but it's not that, oh, the one can't be devotion. That means you're attached to the potato. not to the service to Krishna. Does that make sense? So in other words, the reason that things in the mode of goodness are and pious things are recommended is because the results for Krishna. And Krishna being the supreme pure, the supreme pious, he is piety. He's the personification of it. So therefore, nice things would be what we'd offer. So it's whatever you have, whatever you got, that's what you offer. Does that make sense? So it's very practical. But at the same time, as we know, he's a person, so we have the understanding how to improve things if we have the facility. Not that just our kind of low-grade thing that's good enough. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. It can be said that simply by completely studying and understanding the Karmakanda portion of the Vedas, one will naturally take up the study of Vedanta Sutra. Oh, it cannot be said that simply by completely studying and understanding the Karmakanda portion of the Vedas, one will naturally take up the study of Vedanta Sutra. Those who have studied the Karmakanda but have not associated with saintly devotees do not become eager to understand Brahman, right? That's the whole point of Maharaj Prachina Barhishat. All his Brahmins were Karmakandiyas. They didn't know about Brahman. Therefore, he never heard about it. So when Narad Muni comes along, that's like news to him that there's something else. Right? So that's the point. Just because you're studying, it's not automatic. That's the thing. It's by association. On the other hand, those who have not studied Karmakanda but who have become purified by association with saintly devotees naturally become attracted to understand Brahman. Right? So that's the position. Neither it can be said that simply by understanding the difference between the temporary and the eternal, and simply by attaining the qualities of the saintly persons, one will become eager to understand Brahman. However, okay, so even you can tell the difference between transcendental and the material doesn't mean you're interested in Brahman. Right? Because it's like, you see the Nyayas, that it's not so much they're interested in Brahman, they're just interested in getting out of the material world, and they can tell the difference. Right? That's the whole point, is what's the difference between the two? Okay, this is material, this is like that. So they're doing that. So it's not simply understanding it and not even developing the qualities of the saintly persons. Right? Because it's a matter you have to take on that mood. Does that make sense? So it's no situation generates devotional service. Right? It's only the association of devotees. Right? However, if one attains the association of a self-realized soul and follows his instructions, then these ordinarily difficult to attain qualifications are automatically attained at once. Right? Now, whether after having obtained them at once, you want to practice them, that's another thing. Does that make sense? Because taking of the process, you're actually liberated. Now, whether you
know it.
Yeah, whether you know it, appreciate it, practice it, that's another thing. Okay, that was there. Okay. Brahma Jigyasa, inquiring to Brahman, is Vedic metaphysics, metta beyond physic matter. The term jigyana, inquiry, indicates that God is not a being so radically divorced from sensory experience that he can only be known in terms of what he is not, the via negativa of European theology, which is the method of the Mayavadis called neti-neti. Not this, not this. Right? So in other words, all these things are there, like you were saying here in the European, so then they have it via negativa. Right? Quite to the contrary, God may be positively understood by a human being who properly uses his senses and mind to inquire about his positive existence beyond matter. God as the object of positive inquiry is defined in the second code of the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadyasyayataha, he from whom proceeds the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of this universe is Brahman. Right? In other words, the time to inquire about Brahman, and who is this Brahman? He is the one from which the creation, maintenance, and dissolution have expanded. The universe is full of qualities that emanate from God. Hence, God Himself must be full of qualities. See, if you notice, do you see the printing? Means where it says that emanate from God. Mm-hmm. And then the two dashes. Mm-hmm. It's just those dashes were supposed to be between G and D, right? No?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any of you know this one? Oh, okay. Doesn't make any sense. Because there's the idea is you can't write God's name because it's transcendental, so you can't represent it. So when they write God, they put G-D. So you don't actually write, like that. Yeah. So. Whatever. Makes them happy.
Yeah. Right. Somewhat. Yeah.
Hence, God Himself must be full of qualities. By what authority? Right, means if the universe emanates from God and the universe is full of qualities, that means qualities must be there in God. Right, you can't have something, it means by causation. What is caused can't be have something more than what its emanation means. The result? What's the other thing? There's the effect. The effect can't have something that the cause doesn't have. Right? So that point is then the qualities must be there in God. Though He has them in the transcendental, natural, unlimited form, while here they're in their temporary and slightly distorted form. Okay. By what authority can we be sure that the universe is real and that God is the source of it? The third code of Vedanta Sutra answers Shastrayonitvat. It is revealed in the Vedic scriptures, right? This is a very, very important thing because basically the mind... It's an interesting thing is that, we wouldn't put it this way, but basically it can't tell the difference. The mind, according to modern psychology, they're finding the mind can't tell the difference between what's real and what's not real. It can't actually judge. So it's just a matter of who, by their samskaras, accepts that reality that everybody else is accepting as reality. Then we call that socially balanced. You're okay. Right? But if you have a different perspective, then there's a problem. So it's not that the perspective that's going on now is right or not, but it's the one that's functioning now, so that's the social. So if you're outside of that, you're crazy. And if you're within that, even though you may be crazy, still, it's the accepted crazy. Right? So that's why they say clinical insanity.
Yeah.
Right? So in other words, there's insanity, which means what everybody's doing. And then it's clinical insanity means you're doing what everybody's not doing. Does that mean? So that's why without Shastra to say how to interpret, right? Because we're going to interpret, the mind's going to interpret by its samskar, right? And its ego. So therefore, how is it going to function? How do you decide what to do and what not to do in reality? Like that. So the only way to actually do it is what's revealed in the scripture. Right, because that's coming from the Lord and from great souls who are transcendental, who are not conditioned. So they're not burdened by the cheating propensity, imperfect senses, illusion. What's the fourth one?
Madness.
Total madness. Yeah, like that. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Mistakes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So.
That's an example, right? Right. Does that make sense? So that's why Shastra is the important thing. That's the third code. In other words, inquire about the Supreme. God is that person from which everything's emanated, and you're going to know Him through the scriptures. So right here in the first three, it's already given that essential thing. They're not going around here and there and eventually it hidden away. No, it just bang, immediately. That's why Vedanta Sutra is so essential. It just gets down to the points immediately. So it's 555 sutras. There's nothing wasted there. It's just exactly going one point after another after another. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Vedanta Sutra is not going to convince anyone. It's basically for people who are already with the program.
On one level, if you're on the program of the Upanishads, then it could convince you about what is the actual purpose and what the Upanishads are talking about.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you could come up with so many ideas, impersonal and all this about it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So. therefore, it's for someone, in other words, it's for someone who is pious, who's done all these things, and now it's time to inquire about the Supreme. So in other words, he would be studying Upanishads. So now he should inquire about that. Mm. But now, the essence of the Upanishads is actually given here. There's another place, is Gita Upanishad. Gita is the essence of the Upanishads also. But that's made so it's easily, available. Mm. It's approachable. Gita is very easily approachable. Well, Vedanta Sutra, then it takes more scholastic. Get something in your eye, it just doesn't want to go away. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So there. And Bhagavatam is that essence for Paramahamsas. Gita is for those, you know, for general mass. And Vedanta Sutra is basically for scholars. He's someone who would be studying Upanishads, so by studying Vedanta you can actually know what Upanishads are saying. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda.